dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers.
I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, sitting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source code, ISO, RAM, SIP.
Hello, and welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 145. Today's date is April 25th, 2006. I'm Black Ratchet.
And I'm Dr. Zigman.
Yes, you picked that up actually nicely. It's surprising how many guests just sit there and wait to be introduced. You just jumped right in.
Hey, you know, I got to take my credit when it's due.
Exactly. Carpe diem. Just head right in. Instead of and you just sit there, and then you have to say, and with us this evening is Bartholomew Hummerock. All right.
Okay.
Yeah. Not just surprising how many of you guys do that. All right. First off, just some minor housekeeping. We had an issue last week, and I just want to say a giant thank you to Droops, who stepped up to the plate and
yay, Droops!
Yes, did an episode. Yeah, definitely get a clap here. Well, let me go put everyone on speaker. Yay!
Why are you playing ping pong?
Ping pong.
That's what it sounded like.
I don't know. Yeah, so thanks to Drew for stepping up and doing that episode there. It was definitely unexpected and was about to say unnecessary. He came above and beyond the Call of Duty. How about that? That sounds a lot better than just, it was completely unnecessary, but yes, he basically saved everyone for waiting another day for their BinRev episode. He taped it, I think it was Tuesday night, and he had it ready to go Wednesday morning. And what
10 points for Drew.
Tell me about it. And the original idea was actually we were going to tape it Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday evening, get up Wednesday night, but we had it up by late Wednesday afternoon, thanks to Droops. So, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Droops. Anyway, and I think that's it for housekeeping. Do you have any housekeeping things you want to mention?
I think I'll save some of the other stuff for announcements. No real housekeeping.
No real housekeeping. About the yawn there, he finds BinRev's radio so exciting. Anyway, let's go into the email.
BinRev.com.
All right, our first email tonight is from Too Geeky. I think I guess that's how you pronounce that. I don't know. When people have letters in their names, numbers in their names, you're never sure how exactly you're supposed to pronounce it.
Wouldn't it just be the number?
Well,
how else could you pronounce it? Number two.
The number Too Geeky. I've seen that actually someone actually had it was someone way back in the day. I'm talking about 96 here, and I actually talked to them, and they had the name of, it was in so-and-so 196, and it was...
Yeah, that's AOL days.
Yeah, no, it was I think it was before AOL connected to the internet, and just to show you how old I was, how old I am, and his name was so-and-so 196, and we were discussing it, and I was like, oh no, my name is so-and-so number 19... Six.
Different.
Okay, so I kind of have that whole thing going on there of geez, I'm not sure what he's supposed to be called. But
you know what? I'll admit it. Back in my AOL days, my first ever screen name was Kirk 170117.
Wow.
And for anybody who doesn't know, 1701, that's the call number, NCC-1701. So I was always a big Star Trek fan, and I had strings of numbers, and then I changed it to Dr. Zygmunt. How do you pronounce a carrot? That's a tough one to do.
See, oh, no, don't even get me started on punctuation. Punctuation sucks in names.
All right, anyway.
Anyway, Too Geeky writes in, nice info on smashing the stack. That was really awesome. So to follow up on that, how is Heap Overflow, like with Skype, different than Stack Overflow, or is it the same thing? Heap Overflow, any overflow follows the same type of characteristics. When they talk about Heap Overflow, Stack Overflow, Buffer Overflow, basically they're talking about different overflows in different places. A heap overflow is another name for a buffer overflow, but this one, it occurs in the heap data area. And you need to figure, I can't explain exactly what this is without, you know.
It has a lot more to do with just all the how a process is actually created in memory and how you have different areas. You have the data segment. You're also going to have the stack and the heap. They're going to be right there. And, you know, the stack pushes down, the heap pushes up. And if you just put too much data on it, you'll start running into other areas of memory, and that's where you start having a lot of problems.
Exactly, and that's what an overflow is. You overflow the heap, stack, buffer, whatever you want to call it.
It's been a while since I had to think about the process layout.
I can't remember the last time I actually started fiddling around with heaps. Like it was assembly language class, I'm pretty sure.
I'm trying to remember what gets put on the heap. Is it anything that's malloced is put on the heap?
God, you're going to have to ask me that, didn't you?
Because there's three different ways. You can either have an uninitialized variable,
mm-hmm.
you can have an initialized variable,
yep.
or you can have something that you dynamically allocated with a malloc or a calloc or realloc, anything like that. But, you know, I wish I would have been more prepared to answer the question directly. But, yeah, really, if you're curious about things like this, I think the best thing to do would be start studying up on the process, how a process actually looks in memory, the different areas of the segments of memory that it takes up, and, go from there.
Yes. Another thing I think they briefly covered in there, it's the Shellcoder's Handbook, and I think I might have mentioned this before, and it's on my bookshelf right now, and due to their horrible coloring scheme, I can't actually see who wrote it, but if you enter that in Google or Amazon or something, you'll come up with the book. It's Shellcoder, one word, the Shellcoder's Handbook.
0x.
Yeah. I actually was looking for heap overflows online, and actually the for those of you who don't know, the Microsoft JPEG GDI Plus vulnerability came out mid-late last year. MS-04028 is the security bulletin from Microsoft. That is a recent example of a heap overflow that caused a major issue. And they mentioned, like, the Too Geeky actually mentioned something with Skype, and I remember Skype having some type of issue, but I don't know the details on that, so I can't really.
Did you say 0428?
04028.
04, does that mean they've had 4,000?
No.
Oh, it's different?
Do you not know how Microsoft labels security bulletins?
No, I do not.
Shame on you. It goes MSXX, where XX is the year, and then they just number them from there. So I think they just came out with, like, MS-06-05-something? I don't know. I've just gotten to the point where I don't admin Windows Box anymore, therefore I don't pay attention.
Interesting. You learn something every day.
Yes, it's very handy. It's actually, I think in 03 they actually broke 100. And that was amusing. Like, I was counting down, and I was, like, hoping, like, in December they'd roll over, but it actually rolled over right at the end of November, if I remember correctly. I don't know. Anyway, our next email is from Kayless. Hey, guys, what's up? Long-time listener. I attempted to set up a BinRev meeting in the 760, SoCal, High Desert, a while back. Anyway, stuff came up, and like it always does. At any rate, me and a friend were going to start our own interweb radio show podcasting thingy. Any advice you can give for someone with no experience on the host of any sort? How do you decide what topics are on the show? How did you come up with your format? Though I'm assuming that Stank deserves credit for that. Any other words or wisdom you may have to pass on? It's going to cover anything of general hackerish, freakerish topic. I'd compare it to Off the Hook or BenRev, except I it'd be more comparable to Ben Rev than Off the Hook, as not so much political content. Props to Emmanuel and whatnot. It's a good show for what it is, but eh. I just haven't listened to it in forever because all the political content tends to just make me upset and in content. Where if I listen to your show, I'm inspired to go hack Gibson's LOL. At any rate, if you do have a response, I'd appreciate it if you could email me back at least telling me you responded. I don't have time these days to listen to every Bin Rev, unfortunately, but I do try to keep up. Love the show and keep it up, K-less. And actually, I'm not going to email him back, and he's just going to stumble on this email.
Kapla.
Yeah, I'd be like, Kapla, shut up, you damn trick. Actually, I can't really yell at you for that, because I was in my high school programming class. It was Honors Advanced Pascal. Just feeling old again. And
on punch cards?
No, not punch cards. 3D6s, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I actually got my program to work, and I shouted that out, and like, you know, I think one person got it, but the teacher just looked at me like, what the heck did you just say?
Did you tell her it was a good day to die?
No, I said success, which technically is what it means.
Oh, I thought Kapla meant good luck, you know, things like that.
No. And
like, travel well.
No, Kapla means like, you know, success, I did it, you know.
Oh, I would buy that, because you could say, you know, success to somebody and be like, good luck.
I think so. Do I have my...
Your Klingon to English dictionary?
I have Klingon.
You were making fun of me?
I have my Klingon for the Intergalactic Traveler. Getting back to the email, what I can say is my advice is, you know, for the love of God, don't do it. seriously, the only thing I could guess I could really give you as overall advice is to make sure you have, I guess you could say, commitment to do the show every week. Of course, this is coming off the last week, so you'll get into that. I at least try to step up every week and produce some kind of show for the listening public. And if it, you know, people come to expect that, it's a real slap in the face when you don't do it. Last week. This is why the archives debacle was really just sort of like, you know, a punch to the gut for me. Back when we weren't updating the archives for like 3 weeks just to major issues. And... It was just basically it's just you know, you pissing off the people who are listening to you, and you never want to bite the hand that feeds you. Topics, you know, anything can really be a topic. So, you know, see an article you want to talk about, have a news story, another radio show covering something that you like, but they left key details that you can know about. You know, just go and talk about it. A radio show is basically your own little soapbox. You can get up there and you can rant and rave and. It's amazing how many people actually listen to you. It's kind of sad. If anything, I think just Jason Scott will listen to you because Jason Scott listens to everything.
Yay.
The topic we're covering tonight actually occurred to me Sunday evening, just completely out of the blue. And I just ran it by Zygmunt, and we said, okay, yeah, we can do that. And we tried to get a third person on here, but that didn't actually work out. So.
Would you say that the most important thing is really just to do it?
Of course.
Just record it and actually, because you could talk about it all day and plan, but really, at the end of the day, you gotta get the bits down.
Well, you gotta get the bits down, but at the same point, don't try and bluff your way through it. You need to do some research, you need to do some homework, and if you bluff your way through it, as they say, garbage in, garbage out. And I think, you know, TOXD is listening to this and saying, oh, there's no content shows where they just try to get people to listen in. And sure enough.
Is that what he sounds like?
I'm sure he does.
I doubt it.
He just says,
I don't think he knows how to talk. I think he just uses the keyboard.
What could be? You never know.
We all like TOXD. We're just making fun of him.
We like TOXD. I think that, you know, going back to getting those bits down, and I think if you really want to try to get a feel for it, try and make a twat episode for Droops. I mean, Droops has the whole TWA Tech radio show going on there, and he's always looking for people to do it. And, you know, just, you know, get your people who you want to get together, or just they'll do it yourself, doesn't really matter, and you know, just try to, you know, find a topic, write out show notes if you really want to. I mean, we write, as Sank Dog used to say, we write show novellas. We have everything written out that will eventually reach the release to the general public. And just sit around and try to rap about it for 30 minutes. And you will see that you are well on your way if you can do that. That's the hardest part, just, you know, getting everything in there. And also, if you want to just try, you know, do a couple of beta episodes, I guess you could call it, and just, you know, get the entire oddness of being on the radio. I mean, if you listen to Strom and I's first couple episodes, we basically just sat there and basically walked in front of the microphone and said, is this thing on?
And did you tap it?
No. Yes, we tapped it. So, I guess that's really my own advice. I mean, as for the format, yeah, Stank Dog did all that. Stank Dog did the format, and that was one of his... He had, like, three requests for us when we took over the radio show, and one of them was to keep the format, and I think the other two was to keep the music and... I don't know, something that we continue to do this day, but I completely forget what it is.
All right.
So, our next email is anonymous. And it says, a few weeks ago, you talked about different ISPs and what speeds you got. I'm just so grateful. I live in Sweden, have a standard fiber connection of 100 megabits in unlimited bandwidth. If you don't believe me, and you can see it at, actually, this URL is in Swedish. I'm going to explain it. www.bredband, breadband, sbolaget.net. And it's all in Swedish. I actually did visit it earlier today. But since you guys don't know Swedish, you just might not find it very interesting. Thanks for a great show, and ha, at your speed. I guess that's kind of a shot across the bow there from Sweden. Isn't Sweden supposed to be neutral?
He had too much chocolate. He's a little hyper.
That's Switzerland.
Oh, well, they're close.
Yeah. No, they're not. They're nowhere near each other.
I'm an ethnocentric American. What do you expect?
Apparently, you're too busy doing biology and writing your own, you know, shells and everything, and too busy to know the layout of Europe. Just so, because I know I butchered that URL and people are going to the wrong one, it's tinyurl.com/ZuluQuebec CharlieKilowatt6.
Cool.
Although the one thing cool about Sweden, you know, living in Sweden, all those hot blonde chicks.
Did you see, I was surfing the global interweb, as Stank likes to say,
mm-hmm.
And I noticed that there was a website that was saying that there had been a tax break or a taxpayer buyout a lot of the communication industries in the late 90s, and in return for that, they were supposed to have certain speeds by 2006. And
oh,
now it's 2006, and we don't... Yeah, do you know more about that?
It's on dailyfreak.com. It's also on, I posted it to the forums. It's a topic that I made, and I'm part of my hacking story this week is that my XP partition decided to act up very funky, so I'm currently repairing it right now, but I really can't, actually, I guess I can go surf it on my laptop. What the basis of it is back in, I think it was 1996, all the telecom companies got a $205 billion, with a B, tax break. And it's... What it is they were supposed to get 100 megabit connections to everyone in the U.S. by 2006. And here we are in 2006, and I don't... I'm on a 768K connection.
Wow, that sucks.
Yeah.
At least I have 6 megabits.
Well, I did get the cheap one, so, I mean, I this is nothing but my own study, but it's basically a cost-cutting measure. And actually, I found the link, thank God. tinyurl.com/kilowattmikecharlieoscar4. And, okay, it was a $200 billion tax break. And it's actually... The website is questionable. I will give it that. It's interesting. Just, you know, take this with a large grain of salt. And by 2006, 86 million people in the U.S. were supposed to have 45 megabits connections synchronous to and from the customer.
Wow.
And it could handle over 500 qualities of video and all kinds of stuff. And the kicker is that it was supposed to be deployed in not urban and suburban, but also rural communities. And all of these networks were supposed to be open to all competition. So, like, for example, I could use my super cool fiber connection and I get Speakeasy. So, oh man, that'd be great.
Is there a penalty for not making it happen, or is it one of those slap on the wrist, thanks a lot?
That's the question, because no one says anything about this. They haven't. No one's actually brought this up. The only place I've really seen this is, you know, a couple of discussion boards and this website, which is called Teletruth.
And, oh, I get it. Teletruth. anyway.
Yeah. And he has some statistics here, and it's like Verizon's Fios, which is their fiber thing, is 35% of the Asian standard speed, yet it costs $199 versus Korea and Japan, which costs about $40. And actually, they call it – the interesting thing is they call it Verizon Fiasco. And
isn't that the truth?
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. And SBC's dim speed – instead of light speed. It's pretty interesting. And it's I don't know, it's very questionable. And the fact that, I mean, they got this tax break in 96, and they haven't really delivered to what their promises is, and I just don't think anyone really wants to, I'm not even sure if there was a punishment worked into it, where if you guys didn't do this, you know, here's your, you know, hand it on back. And actually, one of the more interesting things is that this thing was supposed to have all this, you know, completely open to competition. And I mean, talking about, I think it's Wednesday, is it? Tomorrow, by the time you hear this, is your Congress critter is going to vote for a law that says whether or not they can actually do this whole, you know, I'm going to bias my packets in favor of Yahoo over Google thing, which violates the whole net neutrality thing. So that's the question, and it's very interesting. And I mean, going back to this email, I mean, yes, the U.S. broadband, I mean, if you look at it, our penetration sucks. And it's been proven time and time again. I think we're like 16th, or is it 19th now?
I have no idea.
They talked about it on Off the Hook a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I can't fully blame the telephone companies, because we basically had an infrastructure that was built in the 1950s and even earlier than that. So, I mean, and there's certain areas, like, you know, you're not going to get broadband out in anytime soon out in, you know, East Bumfuck Kansas, who has like 10 people and 20 cows. It's just one of those things. It's not cost efficient. It's going to cost, you know, billions and billions of dollars to wire out there, but I guess that's why they got their tax break. It's a very interesting question, and hey, if anyone knows any more, you know, feel free to email us, radio@binrev.com, if there's some Congress critter listening to the show. There's a joke.
I don't know about that.
Senator Kennedy from Massachusetts is listening to the show. Has his little bottle of scotch out. Ah! Tax break!
Actually, a lot of people, or at least what I've heard from this, mm-hmm. is the reason why we don't have such a great infrastructure like this, and it actually came back down to a lot of the cell phone speeds, is when a new technology comes out, America is one of the leaders in technological development, you know, or at least it was in days past, and we would implement these new technologies as soon as they had been brought to fruition or brought to light. And because of that, we built this infrastructure that just simply is not scalable to these speeds, as opposed to a community in an East Asian community where they're still building and developing the land constantly. It's much easier for them to be continually adding new infrastructure with the idea of scalability in mind. And I think, you know, that's almost, you know, we put the cart before the horse.
Well, it's not only that. I mean, it's also come down to population density. I mean, you can cover, I mean, what is it? I'm not even sure what the population of Japan is, but the population of Japan has, like, I think it's like 100 million people. I'm probably way off there, but let's say, for example, it's 100 million people. Now, I know, for example, Japan has about the same land mass as a little bigger than California. So when you're talking about, oh, geez, we need to roll out and hit all of our cell towers, basically we need, in Japan, we need to go out and replace a bunch of all the cell phone towers in California as opposed to the United States of where we need to, you know, replace all of the cell phone towers across the entire U.S.
But it was rolled out without the idea of scalability, and we end up with a problem like that.
Well, it's not that it was rolled out with
the density.
Idea of,
you're right. It's a land mass area.
And it's also, I mean, all of these people have cell phones as opposed to landline now because there really was no major landline infrastructure. I mean, you're talking about moving over to the Middle East. I mean, everyone has cell phones over there because no one has landlines because they never actually took out and laid the wire down.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. No, actually, that's one of my friends, one of my old friends from college. I haven't actually talked to him in years. I actually think he still lives over there. He lives over in Egypt, and he says everyone uses mobile phones over there because there are no telephones anywhere. So,
That's an interesting point. Where you think about it, you put up one cell tower, you're able to service a lot more people than you would by running, you know, cost effectively to run the lines to everybody's house, especially if you're in a rural area.
That's it. We're cutting you off from the bar tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I'm sober, I promise.
Yeah, sure you are.
Well, for now.
Yeah. So, I mean, U.S. is going to be around here for a while, and when you're talking about deploying new technology and everyone needs to have their own incentive, I'm really starting to become a fan of it needs to be, internet really needs to be sort of like a public utility like electricity, water, etc. Of course, then there's the question of, oh, geez, we need to monitor all of this because people might get offended and they don't want to sue the government. There's no real nice solution to this. Anyway, show and tell. Zygmunt.
Oh.
What the hell have you been doing this week or so?
Well, for this past week, I have been completing the final project for my Unix system programming class, and I have written my own shell.
So I know that I know what a shell is, and I'm sure other people do, but what is a shell? I'm a Windows guy, so what is a shell?
Wow, I don't think I've ever been asked to define what a shell is before. I guess if I were to do it off the top of my head, a shell is the part of the system that the user interacts with in order to issue commands and things of that nature.
All right. So
I guess that's the closest for a definition. I mean, is there anything you would add to that?
Well, it's a lot like the easiest way to kind of explain it is sort of like a command prompt.
Yeah, pretty much. Only mine is really cool because not only is it called the Zyg shell, which is what makes it totally cool, but
PSH. You'll get sued for copyright infringement.
That's probably, you know, everybody says that they've written their shell at one time, they use it for like a month, and then they're like back to bash or whatever it comes down to. But I mean, it was a really, really interesting assignment for the only reason that there were a lot of features of shell that I just didn't know existed. You know, like input redirection, which is, you know, you can redirect input and output, but input redirection to an end of file marker, which basically means that I can type a command, then this special sequence, I think it's greater than.
Mm-hmm.
Greater than. And then, no, it's less than. Yeah, less than, and then a string of characters. And then I can keep typing on standard input until I enter that string of characters, and that marks the end of the input. You know, little things like that. There's also, you know, piping. All the input-output redirection and background processes and things like that were all things that, you know, I had to code and implement using pipe and dupe2 and all the interesting system calls that are really for Unix. And if nothing else, it was a great project because of all the things that I got to learn and try out. There are a lot of things where, you know, yeah, I could do that. That's not that hard. But when you sit down to do it, you got to really think about, you know, UMASC was a perfect example. UMASC, I thought, oh, man, I know how to do that. That's an easy stuff. And for anybody who doesn't know, UMASC is what controls the permissions of new files that are created. There's a whole long thing about how UMASC works, but it's not that important. The important part here is that UMASC is an octal, and I was bringing in all these integers as strings, and I was trying to use A2I, which is ASCII to integer, which basically takes a string of numbers and turns it into a real integer. But I couldn't get it to behave right, because that's all in base 10. So I learned about a new function, string to L, which allows you to use a string to long, and it allows you to use your own base. Yeah, and that's a function that I've never used before. I thought I knew how to do umask, but apparently when I came down to actually coding it, I didn't. And you know, I got to learn that and a bunch of other cool stuff for writing my shell. And I think I'm gonna post it on the probably in the DDP blog, if you want to shout the URL for that.
And I think that's digitaldogpound.org.
Oh, yeah. So I'll probably shout that up, probably not tonight, probably in a day or two, try to calm down, because now it's finals time, and anybody who's in school knows all about the stress of finals.
Well, the best thing about finals is the drinking afterwards.
That's true, but you got to get there first.
Getting there is no issue. It's getting there while passing all of your classes.
That's an even better point.
Yeah. I had a very interesting week. So the week actually kicked off with me getting a letter from 2600 saying, hey, you know, we'd like you to present at HOPE.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I actually did submit a talk to him. It's going to be a phone freaking 101, so all of you computer hackers can just go, oh, God, he's going to talk about phones again. So it'll be phone freaking 101. They basically sent me an email saying, hey, you know, we're interested. Are you still interested? And I said, well, yes, I am. So that's hopefully going on. I'm actually not posted anywhere, but I believe the trained monkeys of Hope Number 6 are poking and prodding my entry right now, trying to figure out where I fit into the
scheme of things.
The schedule of things, exactly. And also, like, you know, that moved on, and Friday I headed out with Koresh from Boston 2600. We went out to lunch, and we were chit-chatting along, and he mentioned he saw my article I submitted in 2600. And I'm like, how'd you see that? It's not even released yet. Because, of course, 2600.com said, oh, yeah, we're still on winter 2005. And he said, no, it's out. So we went to the borders, and sure and shooting, I was published as well in the spring 2006 edition of 2600.
A double 2600 win.
I know. Tell me about it. This is a very 2600 week.
What's the topic of your article?
The topic is red boxing, and I kind of like messed up my title, I guess. The title of my article is Not Quite Dead Yet, The Current State of Red Boxing, ACTS, and Payphones in the United States. And the colon is between the Not Quite Dead Yet and the other part. And if you look at my table of contents, it actually says my title of my article is Not Quite Dead Yet. I was like, that really doesn't work out, but I'll just keep that in mind for next time.
Oh, they edited your title.
Well, they edited my title on the table of contents. If you flip to page 52 where my article is, they have the full title of my article. Just on the article, on the way they edit it for the table of contents, it looks like the old man from Monty Python. I'm not quite dead yet. I think I'll go for a walk.
Monty Python.
Every You'll be stone
is
in a moment.
Dude, what a classic series of movies.
I was totally singing that today. It was amazing. And I don't even know where it came from. I guess it was kind of a precursor of the radio show. I guess I'm psychic. Or
both.
A little bit, they're both.
Well, congratulations on your publishing, and on presenting at Hope. I'll have to come up and see it.
Oh. Are you presenting at Hope? Did you submit a talk? Are you even going to Hope?
I'm going to Hope.
Okay.
And I have something that I almost had it done on Friday,
mm-hmm.
but then I had to finish working on the shell, so I didn't get to finish it. But it's a cool thing, this thing that we're working on. And, you know, some shouts to Natus, because it really is Natus's idea, and we're just trying to make it happen. And I don't want to say anything because, you know, it's cool, and I want it to be a surprise. So hopefully look out for that. I want to finish that up in the next week or so.
Well,
but maybe we'll have to see.
Well, in case anyone else was thinking about submitting a talk to Hope, I believe the email that I got said these talks will stop being accepted around May, mid-May. Mid-May, I believe it was.
Oh, mid-May, really?
Yeah, so if you want to get that, you better do that now.
Yeah, get it in soon, though, if you're thinking of submitting. Don't wait to that deadline, because by the time you get to the deadline, you're only filling what's left.
Exactly. I mean, they say that, you know, we'll accept things in the mid-May, but, you know, do it now. And, like, I got my topic, like, set my presentation, like, 75% done, just to make sure I'd have enough for a complete topic, and, you know, I wouldn't be, like, in a stall for time. And I was like, okay, I think I can do this. And I was checking out the website one day, and their little notification said, okay, we're accepting it now. And I was like, bam, fire that off. And I believe I was one of the first few selected, if I remember correctly.
How long between the time you submitted it and the time they let you know?
Oh, about a month or so, I think.
Oh, really? That's some time.
Well, I mean, they didn't start doing it till about, I don't know how long it took exactly, but it took about a month, and I'm not sure where I actually fitted into the schedule, but, I mean, I was pretty sure that they probably weren't going to start looking at the stuff until about April or so, and sure enough, I was right.
Cool.
Indeed, I All right, Ziggy, so we're going for the trifecta of IRC topics tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because we've had IRC Part 1, which was talking about, you know, the basics of IRC, and we didn't cover all of the material in that episode, so we had IRC Part 2, which talked, you know, more advanced
part
stuff.
Two.
And Part 2. And tonight we're going for the third helping of IRC goodness today. And what's our topic tonight?
Our topic tonight, dun, 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 is IRC servers and their setup, evolution, and administration.
Oh, good shit.
You too can have your own IRC server.
Enjoy your petty little dictator hat in the privacy of your own home.
You and the one other user that's going to be on your network.
You're like running like two clients at once, and you're like, ha ha, S-kill.
You're going to G-line yourself.
G-line 127.0.0.1. Oh, all of a sudden all your services disappear.
Oh, well.
I wonder what happens if you do that. That's a good question.
If you G-line, localhost,
yeah.
You know, if at least from my setup, if you G-line localhost, services would turn off. And, you know, we'll actually talk about the way that different servers connect to each other in a little bit, so maybe we should hold off on the...
Yeah.
But you want to start off with some of the evolution of the original IRC client? Or, I'm sorry, IRC server?
I think you should talk about that.
All right, I can do that. The original IRC server, the IRCD, was produced by... he's Polish, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Do you remember his name by chance?
I know his handle. He's called Wiz.
Wiz is his handle, and he was the originator of the IRC networks and of the IRC daemon. And what happened with, basically, IRC, it was ran pretty well, and it started to be developed by, you know, the open source community and just a bunch of people together. Now, the open source community, of course, in the early 90s and 80s wasn't quite as developed as it was today, but it still, you know, it had a bunch of programmers who were working together to make cool stuff for the people. Some of the evolution of that daemon, it went all the way up through the versions up to, we'll start paying attention at IRC version 2.5. And what that did was it named channels. And when I say IRC version, I mean the IRC daemon, the actual server.
There was one point at, it was the IRC server.
Yeah, it was all there was.
We're talking about like back in the olden days where, you know, oh, what are you running? Oh, I'm running... it means it's no longer a question of, oh, I'm running Apache. Oh, I'm running IIS. Oh, I'm running the web server from MCSM, NCSA. Anderson.
It's the one. But, everything
stems. The only one out there.
Well, we started with 2.5, we'll start off with. That's where they brought up the name channels, because, you know, they used to be numbers. Then 2.7 came out and implemented channel bans. 2.8 came out, added the server-specific channels, and, you know, as it comes up from there, everybody, new programmers, just adding new features that they thought were cool. Now, here is where it starts to get a little complex. Most of today's IRC daemons stem from that original 2.8 version of the IRC daemon. And, you know, as programmers often do, they fought, and everything got split up, and as people developed servers in their own directions, and they formed their own networks. So really, the better question...
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that programmers have egos?
Can you believe it? Actually, one of the major staying points that forced the splitting were there were two issues. The first major split was to bring out FNET. And FNET split from, I have this written down, FNET was uses version 2.8.21 plus CS, which was developed by a man named Comstud, and it also uses the IRCD hybrid, which is based on 2.8 of the original IRC daemon. And what FNET was it split off from the rest of the network because there was one server that was allowing everybody to connect to it. And that was creating a lot of problems, you know, clones, new servers could connect, and they would have, you know, it was just not a good situation. So they started FNET, which was the, I believe the name of that server was Edwin, or E-D-W-I-N, or E-D-O-I, it was one of those, something similar to that.
E-I-E-I-O.
And FNET was the Edwin free network. It didn't have this one server on it, because it was, I think they called it plus Q, which is quarantine.
Actually, was it Edwin or was it Eris?
It could be Eris. It could totally be Eris.
I just occurred to me. I believe it was Eris free.
There you go. Eris free it was. Because they ended up quarantining that server and everybody hopped on FNET. Now that's just the first example of the split. A lot of it is more just software based, like UnderNet split, because they had they split from there's conflicting reports that either split from IRC 2.7 or IRC 2.8.10. You know, Downnet also split, and Downnet actually forked off of UnderNet, and that was so that they could have their longer nicknames. Downnet wanted to put in things like WallOps and other fun stuff, and they actually created one of my personal favorite IRC daemons, which is Bahamut, B-A-H-A-M-U-T, which is actually what BinRevNet, which is the new BinRev IRC networks, run off of.
So it's Bahamut? I always thought it was like Bahamut.
Hey, you know, well, you say tomato, I say NMAP. There's a million different ways of saying it. But, I mean, we could go on for hours about how everybody split off. But the major point is, whenever there was a major decision to be made, like for security, should we use timestamps or should we use something else? You know, whenever that big major impasse came along, you know, that's usually when programmers split. You know, a group of them said, hey, I think we should do it this way. So they forked, and they developed it the way they thought it should be. And, you know, another group split and said, no, I think it should be this way. And it's not that one way is wrong and one way is right, one's better than the other, but, you know, people just have differing opinions. And sometimes, you know, that's what allowed to have this evolution of all these different servers, all these different IRC daemons, if you catch my drift on that.
Exactly. It's sort of like, yeah, hell, it's like the Protestant church of IRC daemons.
Of latter-day IRC daemons.
Of latter-day IRC daemons. I like it. Dude, that'd be pretty good, to start up a church on IRC.
I'm sure there's one somewhere.
You can, instead of, like, S-Kill, you can have, like, S-Mite. Smite.
Smite. Nick has been smitten. Oh, I tell you, I still want to write my own IRC daemon. And there's only one reason. I want to implement a little...
Because you're crazy?
Beyond that.
Okay.
I want to implement a little kind of Easter egg. And I want to make it so that anybody who's Nick is Noah cannot flood and cannot be flooded off. And I think that'd be funny. He would be like, oh, look, Noah, he can't be flooded. Anyway.
That was pretty lame.
That's classic. Now, that's just because you said that I'm going to have to do it.
I'm going to fork off of that, and I'm going to, like, make something where it's...
You could fork and create... That's exactly how this happens, because I think something's cool, and you think it's kind of lame.
Exactly. And I'm going to make, like, so my IRC daemon, where no one can be named Sodom or Gomorrah, or else they instantly get killed.
You actually can set that up in the IRC. We're going to talk about it in a little bit after we cover services. We're going to talk about the actual configuration.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something called Reserve Nix, which is part of the Bahamut configuration, which we'll get to in a minute. But I guess, you know, we've kind of covered just the start off of how the IRC daemons forked. Long story short, they all stem from more or less the same. Of course, people have written their own from scratch. But for the most part, you know, the protocol hasn't really changed.
Yeah, I mean, the protocol's all there. There's an RFC for it. You can look it up
online.
Many
RFCs.
Yeah, there's a few. I mean, it's all actually stock documented as a standard. I just looked online. I just pulled down a few of the smaller, less known IRCD daemons. There's a one called INSIP IRCD instead of like INSIPID, which is it's a modular C++ IRC daemon for Linux, and it also runs on BSD and Windows. And it's they say, oh, we're stable, we're modern, we're lightweight. You know, they have all the buzzwords going on there, and they actually wrote it from scratch. I was looking at some of their plugins, and it's all very modular, and it was pretty cool, I gotta say. It was all the way they were doing it. And I don't have it. It's a designed primarily to be a IRC server for something called the ChatSpike IRC network, which is where a majority of these independent IRC daemons get their beginnings from, where basically said, okay, I want to run my own IRC server, and none of these fit my needs. So I don't have a website for them, and I apologize for that. Another one that they have is Beware IRCD, which is an IRC server for Windows and Linux, and it's IRCD.BIRCD.org. And this was pretty funny. It's called Conference Room, and it's a commercial IRC server. And I nearly spit my beer out when I read this. And it's at www.webmaster.com.
A commercial IRC. I'm trying to think of how you could make money with a commercial IRC server.
Damned if I know.
I mean, I guess maybe if you showed like ads in the message of the day, but like, I mean.
No. As in, it's a commercial IRC server. As in, it's an IRC server you can purchase.
Yes, but I'm saying, like, why would you purchase that? Because usually when you make an investment, you hope to have some sort of return on your investment.
Because businesses are weird and they don't like open source?
Yeah, that's an excellent reason. Actually, and that could be more than enough reason, like, right there. Because some companies, you know, you might tell them, let's use Apache. Oh, that's open source. We want to use Microsoft.
IIS.
Yeah, whatever. I don't even mess with it. I just use Apache. But, you know, that could be an excellent reason right there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few. Our network admin in charge of our building has a prevailing attitude if you get what you pay for, which is just like, I'm just going to shut up right now and not rip your head off. So.
Yeah. That's a tough one.
Yeah, when you're sitting there in the meeting say that, you just want to lunge across the table and say, I hate you, die!
Did you have any other individual daemons you wanted to mention?
Not really. I mean, there's a ton of them out there. I mean, if you look onto the global interweb and just do a quick Google search, you literally find, like, you know, stuff written in C, stuff written in C++, stuff written in Java. I actually think I saw one written in Perl.
Oh, really?
Which
wouldn't be that hard, because Perl is nice with the module. That would be a cool little thing.
Be insane. God, no thank you.
I
mean, Perl is nice and all,
rough on the, on resources.
Be crazy what that would be.
Well, really, what good is all these newfangled, fancy IRC daemons without something, you know, to safeguard and protect? And what that goes by the name of is, you want to fill in the blank on this?
Services. Which actually, we did lightly gloss over this from the second IRC episode, but we're just going to go on to we're going to take the opposite tack here and look at it from an administrative point of view.
You want to do the quick 2-minute recap of what services are?
Services just have a couple of, you know, they do a lot of behind the scenes work. Like, for example, there's NickServe, which you can actually reserve your own nickname. And if, for example, like I reserve Black Ratchet, if, for example, Zygmunt comes onto the IRC network and with my nickname, the NickServe will say, okay, can I get your password, please? And if he doesn't know my password, which I hope to God he doesn't.
That's what you think.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. I better source it all in plain text. Either way, if he doesn't know my password, he can't identify himself. And what the NickServe will do after 30 seconds or so, or whatever you actually set it out to be.
Yes, configurable.
It's configurable, and it will change your nickname to something else, like, for example, Guest. So he can't go around and say, oh, I'm Black Ratchet.
With BinRevNet, it's cool, because what it actually does is it won't change your name to Guest. It changes your nick to BinRever.
Ooh. Yes, it does, doesn't
it? Which was, let me tell you, that was not an easy thing to implement, but we're not going to go there right now.
But Zygmunt stayed up at night, had tons of coffee, and did it for the good of the community.
I'm giving the free plug to Monster Energy Drink. You know, you can have two of those. I don't think I slept for, like, 18 hours.
I'm going to give the free plug to Samuel Adams, Boston Lager. Always a good decision. This week's episode brought to you by Boston Lager. Anyway, yes, there's more than a few services out there. There's also one called ChanServe, which basically does a lot of the NickServe things that NickServe does, except it does it for channels. Like, you know, it keeps notes on, like, you know, what the topic is, who should be in control of it. Like, for example, if I leave my channel and I lose my op status, and everyone else is still in there, and I come in at some point later, ChanServe will say, okay, I know who you are, you're an op, I'll give you operator status. So if ChanServe wasn't there and I popped in and people were still in the channel, I would not get operator status. They wouldn't even know who I am, which is because it treats us all as equals.
Mm-hmm.
What else is there? There's also MemoServe, which basically is, I never understood the point of this, just send a bloody email. It basically is a tiny little built-in email services for, or quote-unquote, memos for IRC, in case you ever want to use it or something.
For something, huh?
Yeah, I don't know. If you don't know the person's email address, maybe, I guess that's the only thing I can think of.
Which is actually, it's a valid concern. You know, like, let's say you just happen to know that my nick is Dr. Zygmunt, but you don't know my email address, drzygmunt@drzygmunt.com, or anything like that.
Mm.
But that'd be a cool use. Have you ever heard of the OpServe? OpperServe?
Well, why don't you go over that? Because I think unless a lot of people are IRC ops in their spare time, they won't know what that is, because that's really not a user-based services.
Yeah. Basically, long story short, BinRev decided to set up our own IRC network. We won't go into the reasons why we had to, but long story short, we had to set up our own IRC network. And all of us are hardcore IRC junkies. We're on IRC all the time. We're typing, you know, messaging to each other. But none of us have ever had to be like the IRC op, which is the equivalent of root of IRC. You know, he's god of IRC. He has power to do whatever he wants. And, you know, that basically just says about it. He can do whatever he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And OpperServe is one of the packages that comes with the services that BinRevNet uses, and that goes by the name of Anope. And what's cool about Anope, what's really cool about it, is it's thought to be one of the closest to Downnet's legendary services, because Downnet's got bomb services. And it's cool because it's a fork from Epona, which is E-P-O-N-A. And if you spell it backwards, it becomes Anope. Oh, yeah, slick.
Trixie hobbuses.
But what OpperServe can do is it makes a lot of the things of being an IRC op easier. You know, sometimes some of the commands are really, really tough to remember. Some of them have long, drawn-out things. And, you know, OpperServe just kind of is part of services that works together with the operator to make his job easier. You know, it also interfaces with a lot of the other services directly. ChanServe, NickServe, BotServe, MemServe, all those jazz. It's really easy to get them to work and play nice with OpperServe. And, you know, that's the first cool little service that exists. But as I said, Anope is actually, probably should have covered this a minute ago, but you know how you have an IRC daemon?
Yep.
You also have an IRC services daemon. And what that IRC services daemon does is it acts just like another network node, another hub, or whatever you want to call it, and it actually directly connects to your IRC daemon. And the two of them can chat with each other, and that's pretty much how services work. It's an entire other server, or an entire other daemon process. And like I said, the first one is... I'm sorry?
That's really interesting. I never knew that.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I had to set it up.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, Anope is the one that, you know, I tried a couple of them, because I wanted to see how they all worked out, which one was best for my needs. And I happen to really, really like Anope. And that's what I'm going to give my five stars too, and it has a really cool feature that I didn't see in any of the other ones, and they call it DEFCON. It's a DEFCON system. And it basically means, let's say that out of nowhere, you know, you have clones busting into your network, and people are getting collided, and, you know, just all hell is breaking loose in your IRC server, you can set DEFCON 1, and you actually have it pre-written what the rules for DEFCON 1 are. No more incoming connections. Everybody is required a password. DOP all users. You know, stuff like that, which is a cool little feature. You know, sometimes if you're sitting there doing these commands by hand, you know, even a minute in the computer world can be forever. So this quick little DEFCON 1, everybody's locked down, and that's a cool feature of a Nope that I like.
Do, like, klaxons, like, drop out of the ceiling and everything?
You know, if you want to write it, if you want to code it, go for it.
I can just picture Zygmunt's room. It's just, like the scene of War Games.
With the papers everywhere. Hey, that's actually how I connect to the internet. I have an old rotary phone that I put on a cradle, an acoustic coupler, for my modem.
I was actually thinking more along the lines of NORAD.
Oh, you're thinking, oh, that's a little bit more credit. I feel the love.
Yeah. I think he's going like, oh my god, we're under attack on the IRC server. Set the thing to DEFCON 3. And you just hear the klaxon go off, and the major light moves up from 5 to 3.
I'd piss on a spark plug if I thought it'd make any difference.
Oh, do you really know that line was completely ad-libbed?
Oh, was it really?
Yeah, I was reading that. I was actually checking it out on IMDb.com, where it was just random trivia facts about the movie. And that line was completely ad-libbed by the guy
whose name we don't know.
Yeah. The only guy I know, I've seen him like twice, and I'm like, oh my god, it's the general from War Games. The one thing I know him from.
All right. Cool little tidbit.
Yes.
Moving right along. We're just going to cover quickly two more services because I want to get to configuration. That's the interesting stuff. SRVX, it's a bit more of a trimmed-down version. It offers NIC ownership, channel management, and IRC op functionality. You know, not really much else to be said. It's your basic run-of-the-mill basic services. And HyberServe 2, it's designed to work with the hybrid IRC daemon, which means, you know, actually, I probably should have mentioned this too, the services do not work unilaterally with all other IRC daemons. A lot of them, you know, are written specifically to work with specific ones, and you really cannot link different IRC daemons. Some of them have support for it, but out of the box, most of them will not talk to each other. So that's another thing to keep in mind if you're actually designing a network, is you pretty much want to keep things uniform. I think I said HyperServe. It's designed to work with the hybrid IRC day, and it's a new make on HyperServe, which was the first one. You know, that's why they have HyperServe 2, which is no longer developed and is now unsupported.
Hmm.
Cool.
That's pretty neat.
All right. I'm going to take just a quick second, and if I could, I would like to run through the nitty-gritty of setting up your IRC daemon. And, of course, this is going to apply to Behemoth, or however it's pronounced, which is what BinRevNet uses. And this will only take a minute or two, but they have an excellent file that comes along with the source package. It's called the references file. I think it's reference.txt. You know, pretty easy there. And what it does is actually it's a breakdown of how every configuration option works, and then you're supposed to create your own and copy it over to the ircd.conf, which is just the configuration file. We'll take a quick minute and go through a couple of the interesting parts of the configuration file. A lot of it works in, I don't want to use the word class, but it really is a class. You know, you have little blocks of how each thing is set up, and those are referenced by other blocks, which is kind of the definition of a class. But the first one you'll have to deal with is global. You know, it's the global class that I'm calling it. You put
global.
In there, you easily put in there the name, pretty self-explanatory. Info, which is, you know, pretty self-explanatory as well. And then you have to put in the admins. The first admin, which is if somebody types /admin, they can actually dump admin information. Any normal user, if they're having a problem with the network, they can contact the admin. And that's easy, you just put in some text. Moving right along, we have server options. The options, you have the network name, which is yours, of course, the name of your IRC network, BinRevNet in our case. Then you have local K-line, which is an email address that people can contact if they do get K-lined. Then you have show links, which will show what servers are linked to each other. And then a cool feature that I didn't see in any other IRCD is it's called allow split ops. It'll actually allow you to, if a server is net split from the rest of the network, it will not give ops to people who join empty channels. And if anybody recalls, do you remember how that attack can be used?
Yes, I do. It's Ryzen and NetSplit.
Exactly, and that's how you can prevent riding in on the NetSplits. All right, and then
riding in on the NetSplits. Oh yeah.
Something that probably everybody's actually going to want is the host mask. And that's, you can have a staff host mask. It's staff_address, and then in quotes, just easily, you know, whatever you want. For us, it's staff.binrev.net. I'm the only person who uses it, but that's okay.
Well, I want it. You just don't tell me how.
You know, I would be more than happy to tell you how. I can't tell you on the air, though, because you have to use a password. And,
okay.
That'd be pretty bad if we dropped our docs that bad.
So it's a password for the opera serve, like Binky?
It's a password when you connect to the server. And you know, we'll skip ahead. Most of this stuff is pretty easy. But we'll jump ahead real quick to the port. Each port block is what's pretty cool. This is where you get into it. You have port, then you have your block. You have the actual port that you want to connect to, standard, you know, 6667, 6668, what have you. And then you have the bind address. For us, it's 69.60.122.171, which is the IP of that hub. And what you actually do is you have multiple of these. Like, we have ones for 7, 8, 9, and 7,000. We also have our services, which happen to be located on the same server, is also going to connect it uses its own port that only listens on localhost, 127.0.0.1. So this is where you brought the interesting point, where if you were to G-line, which is a global kill of, a global ban, if you were to G-line localhost, that would kill services in our network because they wouldn't be able to reconnect.
And, I mean, you mentioned ban here. That's a ban from the server, not a ban from the channel, correct?
Yes, a G-line is a server-based. Yeah, I don't even really think in terms of channels anymore, and that's probably not a good thing. Because I'm real quick to type slash kill instead of slash kick.
Ouch.
Because, you know, sometimes when you have the power...
Zygmunt is drunk with power. He's wearing his petty dictator hat. Him and Kim Jong Il, and Aham Raharahadi over in Iran. Drunk with power.
Let me cover one more little area. Actually, two more areas, and then we're going to call it a day on the config file. The rest of it is pretty self-explanatory. But just parts that I had a little trouble with. The allow parts. Each allow is for you can set it so that they use different ones of the ports. You know, like if you want to allow anybody to log in through 6667, 8, 9, you know, you can have allow blocks for that. And then you can also have the custom allow blocks for, like, the one that we use for that higher number server. We have allow, you know, host, then you have a host mask, an IP mask, the port number, which is going to refer to what you had as that port class, and then a password to connect to that server. Flags, you know, the flag that we have set on this one is M, which allows host masking. And then you have to define the class of what it's going to drop people into. And what classes for that is you can have a user class, which are your normal users, and then you have your opera class, which is, you know, the channel ops. I'm sorry, not the channel ops, the IRC ops. And you can actually have people, you could set up, if you want, you could block off IRC ops by just the port, and you could just have a password and have it drop them directly as an IRC op. But, you know, I tend to like to have the extra layer of security, which brings us to the last part of the configuration file we're going to go over, which are the opera blocks. Something that I didn't see anywhere on the internet, and I figured out just from testing it, the opera blocks, you just have multiples of them. For each IRC op, you have your own opera block. You know, like we have opera, name, Dr. Zygmunt, my password, the access that I have. Then I have it set up so that it also blocks based on IP addresses, which is cool. And you can have multiple IP addresses. Like I have localhost and my IP address. Because sometimes if I want to connect from localhost, it makes it very easy.
That's not bad.
Not bad at all. And then, you know, as long as we mentioned it earlier, we have the restricts, which is a cool part. You can actually, the only restricts I have in hard-coded in the configuration file are for services. You know, you can do a restrict, the type, which is a NIC, the mask, which is the name that you want to block out. Like here's one for NICServe. And then the reason, and then when people try to change their NIC, this is what they'll get, you know, reserve for services. This is an actual point where the opera serve becomes really, really helpful. Rather than messing around with the restricts, you know, which could get to be quite lengthy, you can go ahead and you can bust out with you can use OperaServe and Chance and NickServe together through OperaServe to blacklist certain NICs without having to actually change the hard code configuration file, which is important.
That's
for
cool.
It's important for like you, for example. You're a perfect example. You are another IRC op.
Yes, I am.
But you do not have access to the server configuration files.
Mm-hmm.
So if you needed to do something, you can use OperaServe. Or you could just ask me, because, you know, we're cool like that.
Oh, when you're not there. That's basically why I was an IRC op.
Oh, yeah.
When you're not there, so I could do something.
Exactly, which is always nice.
Mm-hmm.
It covers a couple of the tougher parts of the configuration file. Of course, it's a radio show, so it's kind of tough to, you know, go through a configuration file. But those were just, so you get the general idea of it. It's all broken down into groups. And just kind of keep that group mentality of how each thing is. Have you gotten a chance to try out some of the cool IRC op powers?
A couple of them, not a lot.
I know which one's your favorite.
My kill or change the nickname?
The change nickname, the SVS Nick. Yeah, have you used that?
I'd rather not admit to it, but yes.
You only use it to test it to make sure it works.
Of course.
There's only two other real IRC op commands that are probably critical to anybody. Mm-hmm. Actually, make that three. The first one is to become an IRC operator. You use /oper, then your username and your password. And that will identify you to the services to be like, yo, I'm an IRC op, hook a brother up. And actually, I'm sorry, that doesn't identify you to services. That actually identifies you to the IRC daemon.
Hmm.
So you have the oper.
That's interesting.
Then you have /connect, which IRC ops use to connect servers that for whatever reason aren't connected. You know, it could be the first time you're bringing it in, connection might have dropped for some reason, and you don't want to wait the timeout before it to retry. You can give it a /connect. And then the command that I use over and over again is rehash, /rehash. And what that does is it basically just reloads the configuration file. Another example is when we added a new IRC op, I have to change it in the configuration file, and I rehash, and now instead of having to bring down the entire daemon, kick everybody out, and wait for them to reconnect, I can just reload and add that new IRC op.
So the question is, did you rehash on April 20th?
There was no need to re. It was just one continuous. Anyway.
Sorry, lame joke, but it just had to be said.
I'll give you 10 points.
All right.
Droop's got 50 for coming through, but we'll give you 10.
Well, I got another 40 to make up in like the next, 20 minutes in the show?
Something like that. But I think one of the only concern that people really have with bandwidth is resource usage, and I'm sorry, concerns they have with IRC running an IRC daemon is resource usage and bandwidth. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I guess when you're talking about major networks with 15 bazillion users, it's starting to become more of an issue. But we got 50 users at a time. I don't think we take up that much bandwidth, do we?
No, not at all. And you can actually limit the number of people that are allowed to connect to you. So if you don't want to put a lot of bandwidth out there, it uses no resources, but it basically uses no resources. You know, I've never noticed any hit from it. The bandwidth has been, I have a fair amount of bandwidth that I'm allowed to use, but let's be serious here. All we're really doing is sending text.
And Ziki also needs that bandwidth for his porn.
Well, not for my server. I have my DSL, my 6 megabit DSL for that.
Oh, so that's why you want 100 megabits down. You want to,
Wouldn't that be scary to have, a co-located server just full of prawn?
One of my friends always talked about just doing that and, having it to work out. And just basically the co-located server would download porn all the day, and it would classify it as... it would use basically skin tone recognition to say whether or not it was good porn or not, and then it could run a service on it.
Cool. You'd run out of hard drive space pretty quick.
Well, you would delete the files and basically would just save a hash or something. Speaking of hashes.
That's twice in as many minutes.
Yeah, and don't tell me about it.
I think the last part of this topic that I really to cover is a quick little story that everybody can laugh at me about, because everybody likes to laugh at me.
Oh, of course.
Especially in IRC.
Mm-hmm.
But originally, for the life of me, I could not get services to work. You know, they wouldn't come online, they wouldn't connect, the log files didn't say anything was wrong, nothing was connecting. And I'm banging my head against the wall, and I'm thinking, you know, of course, I have my firewall, so I use IP tables, thanks to the Ben Rev magazine edition that had it in there. And
you know, you don't have a firewall rule set. You have like a firewall dungeon. You're like the
I'm rough.
Seriously, you're like a Nazi.
I am the firewall Nazi. That is true. I'm very, very strict with my firewall.
One Vogue, one Reich, one firewall.
But I made it so restrictive that I forgot that services is connecting on localhost. So the IP tables were actually blocking me from connecting. And that's why services in the beginning didn't work, for anybody who was curious.
Yes, like the three of us that were in the room at the time saying, wonder when services are starting to work. He's like, I can't get it to work.
That's exactly how I sounded, too.
No, that's exactly how you did. I remember you talking about it. I'm going, I have no clue about this stuff. I never actually configured it. I just opt for a little bit.
it's really not that hard. And what we really want to see happen is I'm going to put together a software package, basically a nice mm-hmm. little tarball of the IRC daemon we use with some pre-done configuration files.
Okay.
And it would be really cool if we could get a few more nodes for the BinRevNet. Because we had a little problem the other day where my server had to go down for maintenance for about 4 hours. And that meant we had no IRC. So if we can...
Yeah, maintenance my ass.
Well, you know, I can use a little bit of euphemism. Maintenance, as in crash.
Unplanned maintenance.
But we're going to make it really easy for anybody who wants to. You can be an IRC op on your own server. You know, we're not going to give you global IRC op powers because, you know, we're not crazy. But it's really, really easy. It's going to be as simple as, you know, untarring it and running it. Hopefully we're going to make it that simple. The configuration files, of course, you'll be more than welcome to change them. But if you don't want to, you know, it'll be pretty easy for you. You'll be able to assign your own IRC ops on your server. And you're going to link it up to BinRevNet. And we can hopefully get a nice, decent server going. I mean, we usually have about 50 people on the server at a time now, which is cool, you know.
That's pretty good.
But I think if we had a few more nodes, it would really help out. And anybody who wants to, please, please, in about a week I'll set up the website for BinRevNet, which will be www.binrev.net. And if this is something you're interested in, maybe you want to run an IRC server, or even if you just want to learn more about it, get a copy of the package and play with it locally, either join us, you know, irc.binrev.net is the IRC server. That'll connect you to one of them. That'll connect you to one of them. Or you can drop me an email, drzigman@binrev.net.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I think it'd be cool if we get a bunch of people to set up servers. And
We definitely are looking for more people to set up servers. Like, for example, you know, right now I think... I don't know. Can I say where the server is?
Oh yes, there's actually a naming convention.
We'll talk about that later. But the server right now is in Florida. Looking for someone, you know, a couple people in the United States. But we'd be cool to have someone in Europe. We do have a couple of, we have more than a couple. We have do have a few European Union users. So if you have like a server in Europe, it'd be really cool if you could, you know, set something up and they could have something closer to them rather than, you know, hopping across the pond and heading over to America.
It's totally easy to. It's set up, and then it's as easy as you want it to be or as complex as you want. If you want to sit there and play with it all day, then you're more than welcome. Otherwise, just set it up and let it go.
Mm-hmm.
It's an easy, and it would be really cool if we get a couple of people to set those up. And we do naming conventions. Like, the first server is Reality, which is a name I stole from somewhere, and anybody who knows, cool. It's reality.fl.us. .binrev.net. So basically, if you want a server, you get to name it your own cool little name. Of course, if it's totally gay, we're not going to do it, but you get the idea. And then just your location, .binrev.net, and that will make it very easy for other people who want to connect to various servers to go ahead and go for it. The only question I have, and if anybody is really knowledgeable about this, I'd much, much appreciate somebody to contact me, is how to set up the irc.binrev.net to rotate to go to other servers. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Sort of a round robin.
Yes, I've never set that up before. I've done a little bit of surfing about it, but if somebody has some experience, jump on by Channel Bin Rev and we'll chat about it.
UpInRev on irc.upinrev.net.
Okay, we definitely plugged the heck out of that.
Did I mention that we have irc.upinrev.net now?
Oh, is that an IRC server?
I think so.
So we can connect to irc.binrev.net and then join Channel Binrev and be instantly surrounded by like-minded individuals?
Exactly.
Wow.
2600 net ain't got nothing on us.
Well, but we always respect other networks, even though they're not as cool as us.
Yes, no one's as cool as us. We are the masters.
Of disaster.
And the commanders.
And the IRC ops.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Well, that was kind of cool. I mean, I just sort of sat back and listened because there wasn't really a lot for me to talk about because this has been your baby. I mean, you set up the server, you guys set up the domain. I believe you bought the domain too. So I mean,
no, I didn't. I didn't have to pay for it. That was nice.
Oh, okay.
I do have the authoritative control over the name server, so.
Oh. I set up, you know, ziggyporn.binrev.net soon. Ooh.
Oh, you know, and probably just a quick shout also to Strom Carlson. He did set up the original server that we were using while we were setting these up. Hopefully we'll get him the link, but we're not sure what's going to actually go down with that. But I feel kind of bad that I'm stealing his glory from him. But so definitely shouts to Strom on setting up the original. But, yeah, everybody, come on down and check us out. We all have a good time. A lot of people different, especially me. You see me doing programming all the time. Why doesn't this function work? And then somebody be, you idiot, you forgot to typecast. So if you have a technical question, it's a great place. People, there's a whole range. We got noobs all the way up to elite. And I fit in along with the noobs.
You and me both.
Yep. But there's always, you know, even if you just have a quick question that you can't find anywhere, stop on by. It's always a good time.
Exactly.
All right, IRC Daemons and you.
That should be the name of the story. I think that's going to be our title for the episode.
IRC D and you.
Exactly.
Nice.
All right. Let's see. I think we can wrap this up right about now. Do you have any announcements?
Just to come join us. And I think that doesn't. Yeah, just come on by. Join us on Channel Binrev.
IRC.binrev.net.
Yep.
My announcement, CarolinaCon is coming up, and that's CarolinaCon.org, June 9th and 10th in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I figure we can start plugging this now. Hope is coming up, and that's July 21st, June 23rd in New York City at the Hotel Pennsylvania. And you can come see me, and you can hopefully see Zygmunt and lots of other like-minded individuals. Maybe we can have an IRC Pound Binrev gathering of some sort. Who knows?
Nice.
Let's see. What's our site of the week? Site of the week, widgets.yahoo.com. And I was actually kind of disappointed about this because I found out that for those of you who have never heard of Confabulator, it's basically a bunch of desktop widgets. Basically, it's a macOS dashboard. Dashboard. Isn't that what they call it? I think. It was macOS Dashboard before macOS Dashboard was macOS Dashboard. They were basically, Steve Jobs ripped them off. Let's just put it right out there. He pulled a Bill Gates and ripped them all off there. We did. It's the truth.
Pulled a Bill Gates getting revenge.
Yeah. So it's really cool. And actually, they were an independent company and they got bought over by Yahoo, which is something that I didn't know about. I just kept on saying, oh, you know, we've updated. And I was like, yeah, I'll upgrade later. And I was like, okay, I don't have anything to do. I'll upgrade. And they said, oh, we're at widgets.yahoo.com now. And I'm like, what? So it's for Mac. It's for Windows. And there's a lot of interesting things. And they do a very nice job with them. And they're cute. So you can have cuteness all over your desktop.
That's what we all need.
Exactly. More cuteness on the desktop. Email is radio@binrev.com, as always. It hasn't changed since the first show, so I don't see why you wouldn't know that by now. Closing music tonight is... Hold on, we need to go flip that up here.
And while he's flipping, I'm going to do quick shouts.
Oh, okay.
Quick shout to Dr. Sam Hassau, or Dr. Sam Hsu. He's a professor at, let me not get into too much detail, but he's an excellent professor, and he's been very, very helpful, not only in classwork, but in a lot of my own personal projects. So I just wanted to say a special, I appreciate it to him. Shout out to Blunderbuss. Mm-hmm. He made it to the BinRev meeting, and he's also in IRC all the time. Come say hi to him. And shout out to Super KT. That does it for me.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
I'll send shouts out to you, Dr. Zygmunt, and shouts out to everyone who's on Pound Bin Rev, moved over to the new server, and hasn't complained. So, everyone except Tom. Yeah, damn right, I just called him out. Now, closing music tonight is Metroid to Brinstar. It's a remix by Avian. And I think that sort of wraps it up for this episode. And as always, we see you next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.